Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA all across upstate and way out to Phoenix, Arizona. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today at 633-3700 and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants. And that's guaranteed. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And you'll want to do that today because it's a very competitive market out there. The listing inventory is down again this year. Year over year, and that means that when a good house or any house comes on the market that's in a neighborhood that's seemingly desirable, and there almost everyone is today, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that today, you better be prepared. And the best way to be prepared is by having a mortgage commitment in hand, not a pre-approval, which every other lender in town touts, but an actual mortgage commitment. The only thing that's missing is the house itself. And there is no cost or risk to you in applying under this under these terms. So call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700 for personalized, customized, what we like to call knock your socks off service. And check out that low rate guarantee. Some restrictions do apply, but the details are on our website at huntmortgage.com. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. All you have to do is simply dial 716-631-4800, enter the street number of the house you want to know about. That's all you have to know. No matter whose listing it is, doesn't have to be ours. And the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property all automatically and just that fast. Any time in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other brokers, and there's no faster way to find out about any piece of real estate completely and total information. Hunt Real Estate is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, Buffalo Sabres, and Rochester Americans, and hopefully we all can anticipate exciting seasons this year with all the changes taking place on all those teams. This show is broadcast live on WBEN 930 AM. And if you'd like to participate in today's show, all you have to do is call us here in the studio at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 or star 930. Those are all free calls, if you're mobile, that is, star 930. And so join us here at Our House. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is Howard Zemsky. Mr. Zemsky is the head of the Empire State Development Corporation, very, very important institution in our state right now. Good morning, Howard.
Good morning, Peter. Great to be with you.
It's good to have you back. It's been a while. I just realized it's been a year and a half or more, which is a long time in between our visits. Yeah. But I'm glad you're here. There's a lot of stuff going on at ESDC. Tell me, first of all, tell our listeners how you got into this thing.
Yeah, that's a great question.
All of a sudden, there was Howard.
Right. So, you know, the governor's approach to economic development is more regional. And some years ago, I would say 6 years ago now, I had the opportunity to co-chair the Regional Economic Development Council with Satish Tripathi of UB. I think we did that successfully here in Buffalo for some years. And the governor asked me to head Empire State Development. And some of the strategies that we used in Buffalo and to apply those across, you know, the state, particularly upstate. The downstate economy has done pretty well for many years. The entire upstate economy struggled for probably 40 years, as you know, Peter. And so I think some of those strategies that have been impactful here and have, you know, helped with the revitalization, we're, you know, doing similar types of things across upstate. So I think that's how that came to be.
So you recognized that and tapped you, which is a good thing for us here in Western New York. You know, you mentioned a very important fact, I guess, and that is that, and you, indirectly, there's essentially two very different economies in the state.
Yep.
And if you look at Forbes's recent ranking of the business climate in the 50 states, we ranked 24th,
right,
which is the highest we've ranked in a long time.
Right.
We're even ahead of Alabama.
Yeah.
And last week I had on as my guest a colleague of mine from Alabama, and we were talking about what they were doing economic development wise in Alabama to attract companies like Mercedes and Hyundai, and I think, is it Honda also out there? I think Honda's there too.
Maybe so.
So you used the word strategies. What were the strategies that you employed as head of the Regional Economic Development Council that you are now working with across the whole state?
Well, one of the things that I think we did successfully in Buffalo is focus on what we refer to as smart growth and, you know, just kind of creating an environment that's more conducive to, I would say, young people. And you know, not just young people, right, Peter? But we have to look through the lens of young people because we lost so many of them for so many decades. So if you look at what young people are looking for, it's, you know, downtown vitality and waterfront activation and mixed-use neighborhoods and walkability. So we did focus on that in Buffalo. We focused on activating the waterfront, and we focused on the outer harbor, the inner harbor, all the downtown revitalization strategies that you've seen. We do that now across the state. And the governor has, you know, several initiatives, the downtown revitalization initiative across the state. And the REDCs, these regional councils, are all focused on downtown revitalization now as a matter of course. We focused on workforce development, and you look at some of the initiatives with Burgard High School in Buffalo, or you look at the Northland Manufacturing Workforce Center that is in the process of being constructed now. We have a lot of jobs that are looking for people. There was a time where we had a lot of people looking for jobs, but, you know, the pendulum has swung to some extent. Unemployment across the state is pretty low. And if you talk to companies, one of the biggest concerns they have is, can we find people with the skills that we're looking for? So some of those are in the trades. You know, a lot of parents steered their kids away from the trades during the period of economic decline upstate for many years, and now we're looking for people who have more skills in the trades, you know, in addition to higher tech skills. But the trades, you know, doesn't matter which one you're referring to, whether it's construction or maintenance or, you know, mechanics, engineers, you name it. And we focus on innovation. So, you know, Buffalo didn't have enough business startups for a long time. One of the reasons we developed the 43 North Business Plan Competition, things of that nature, was to really, you know, stock the pond, so to speak, with talent and companies from around the world and just change the culture of innovation here. And we invest in the business plan competition. The governor has been supportive of that competition now and has funded it for like the next 5 years. So, you know, it's, you know, been a very exciting part of the Buffalo Renaissance, and a lot of these are connected to the medical campus. Some of them are life science companies, some of them are tech companies. And then we're focused, of course, on, you know, some of the industries that we have, you know, real success in here, whether it's tourism or life sciences or advanced manufacturing. Those, not just those industries, but we have real strengths in those industries. And when you talk about a strategic plan, you want to double down on where you have some proprietary strengths, whether it's workforce or logistics or supply chain or low-cost power or a skilled workforce. And those are the industries right now where we have some unique strengths.
Well, I've been taking notes feverishly over here because you said a great deal in that series of comments. Beginning with smart growth, this is, you know, an often misunderstood topic.
Yep.
And then you listed a bunch of things under there. But I think perhaps the most significant one is the conduciveness, or if that is such a word, how conducive a community is to attracting young people.
Right.
And you listed some things that are critical to that, the vitality of our downtown area, waterfront development, walkability. These are things that, as you know, have been talked about for a long time.
Yep.
And you know, it seemed like we even talked about them here. People like George Grasser, who has been deeply involved in the whole new urbanism issue, and even at a conference, I believe, just about 2 years ago, right about now, which is truly phenomenal. The best minds in that whole world were here.
Yep.
And they marveled at our we were at the in the KeyBank Center, looking right out over all this development, and it was truly amazing. And you and I looked at it just from the Buffalo News just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's great.
A lot of it was organic.
Yep.
And some of it was state sponsored.
Yep.
And we talk about these things on this show, which we do often. Someone will call and say, well, isn't the state picking winners and losers? And how would you respond to that, given, you know, somebody has to have a strategy, sure, and somebody has to get the job done. And you and I have been at meetings for a long time where we've talked, we've debated this.
Yeah.
Do we allow things to be go organically, encourage that, or do we take advantage of whatever largesse might be out there from the government?
Yeah. So, I mean, the idea of having any government support of these projects, and mostly the government support goes into access of the waterfront, right? It's gone into that more than it's gone into the sort of private sector development. But, you know, it's like anything else. If you do a good job of developing the waterfront and making it accessible and programming it, if you look at like what Erie Canal Harbor Development's doing, it's really programming the waterfront. It's built the infrastructure. It's built the skating. It's created an environment where people will invest in buildings in and around there with their own private sector dollars. And I think success has to be determined by how much private sector investment and employment do we get at the end of the day. The government isn't going to fix up every building and doesn't want to. It just wants to create the environment that then attracts private sector investment. And I think that's what you see happening there. The Pagulas invested mightily there. The recent acquisition of One Seneca Tower, I think you have to look at that and say, okay, that has to connect back to, from that building, you know, you can walk to Canal Side. People look and say, what is there around this building? Do I or do I not want to invest $100 million, whatever the number proves to be, mm-hmm, in the building? Is there transit? Is there an active waterfront? What can I walk to? So we don't really want to invest in the private sector real estate. We want to create an amenity that attracts private sector investment all around it, and then just develop a strategy so that, you know, the uses and the purposes of the private sector investment are consistent with, you know, the recreational nature of that area.
So I understand you. There's the public amenity first, and then,
yep,
and then hopefully the private development will follow. And we've done several shows on the waterfront development over the years, going back to when we were all waiting for a big box to go there, and that didn't happen. But
right,
but in the process, it attracted a lot of attention. All
right,
of a sudden, people said, well, somebody's going to do something here.
Right.
And then Jordan Levy, I think, was the first head of the Waterfront Development Commission. I don't know what we called it at that time. It probably had 12 words in it at that point. And he really began the process of kind of cheaper, faster, more access, or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
He had a little slogan. And a lot of good people worked on that to open things up. And Robert Joya has kind of continued that. And Robert was on the show, and he said that some $50 million has been invested publicly.
Yep.
And that has spurred at least $250 million in private investment,
yeah,
probably a lot more than that now.
Yeah, a lot more. I mean, if you just look at the Harborside project and look what the Pagulas have put in that, you know, the combination of the hotel, the retail, the ice skating rinks. I mean, there's hundreds of millions of dollars in that project. You've got, you know, some of this is some public money going into the Children's Museum. Again, that's like a, you know, regional asset and amenity. But they've raised some additional money for that. There's an RFP now out for private sector investment on select parcels nearby. So we expect that, again, will be private sector investment. You know, you just look at the investment that Bendershin made in the Courtyard Hotel, mm-hmm, in the Phillips Lytle. Those are all private sector investments primarily that are, you know, leveraging the public investment and the public plan for, you know, the inner harbor. So that's great to see potential investment out in the outer harbor, which is now a state park next to it. And so, you know, you've got people who are saying, I have confidence in the plan. I have confidence in the future. You can't invest, you know, nine figures or eight figures or whatever the number is, unless you believe there's a, you know, positive trajectory for the economy in the region.
The mission of the show is to help our listeners protect and enhance their investment in real estate. That's really what we're talking about here.
Yep.
And you know, the measure of that beyond the obvious in terms of pricing of real estate, which we're all talking about in terms of its escalation with positive increase in values. But the real measure, in my opinion, is people's attitude.
Mm-hmm.
If they feel good about the future, which is can largely be defined as, do I have a good job?
Yep.
Do I like what's around me? Can I send my kid to a good school?
Right.
Very fundamentally basic things. But if they feel good about those things, they'll buy real estate.
Right.
And they'll buy more real estate, and they'll pay a higher price.
And that's happening, right? I mean, we're seeing
it. Is happening. But, I mean, in your conversations with your colleagues,
yep.
I mean, how much do you – you can't measure that stuff. I mean, but you must talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, when you see articles and news reports that Buffalo is, like, the hottest real estate market in the country or the top 10 hottest real estate markets in the country, I mean, those are not the kinds of headlines that we're accustomed to getting. So, you know, we look at that. I look anecdotally at, you know, I've got three kids all in their 20s. Their attitude about Buffalo, and I'm sure if I asked you the question, you would say the same thing. And so many other people just come up to me and talk about this most important fact, that the way their kids perceive Buffalo today, now that they're 26 compared to when they were 16, is 180 degrees different. That, without that, we wouldn't have accomplished anything. But really, the acid test is, what do young people feel about their community, and do they see a future here? Do they have opportunity here? And one of the things about Buffalo is we have this retirement cliff, right? Because we lost young people for a long time. Older people stayed and are now, you know, retiring. So there's, you know, when I talk to businesses here in Buffalo, and across now increasingly upstate, the number one issue they have is, look, we've got some positions that are, we're not finding people for. So right now it's a good market for people to be thinking about coming back to Buffalo. I know people who have left over the years are still extremely fond. That's one of the things I notice when I go across the state. There is a passion for Buffalo among people who used to live here and grow up here that is indescribably unique. People just don't feel that way necessarily about other areas they grew up in. Buffalo has this like diaspora of people all over the country who follow Buffalo, love Buffalo, and want to come back. And some of them are starting to come back. So I use every opportunity to tell people the opportunities now in Buffalo are greater than they've been a long time. The quality of life is higher, and the enthusiasm is kind of off the chart. So for people who have been saying, hey, I'd love to come back someday, that someday is like today. So that's, you know, that's great. But I agree. How do young people see it and the way that's changed is maybe the most single most exciting thing about what's happening.
We refer to that in our industry, and I'm sure in other industries too, as kind of a coolness factor.
Mm-hmm.
Is this neighborhood or this city or this town cool?
Yep.
And what makes for a coolness? And then you start to layer that down, and
yep.
And it goes back to a article that I've referred to a million times on this show in on the front page of USA Today probably 12 years ago. I was talking about Cincinnati, and it really kind of defined coolness, and this is what been my measure ever since. It has to do with the arts community,
yep.
How that integrates with neighborhoods, because what happens in many cities, and it's happened here too, the arts community will gravitate towards a edgy community, edgy part of our town.
Right.
And they'll invest and it'll become funky.
Yep.
And then restaurants and bars will follow around it.
Right.
And then when they follow, more people come in. All of a sudden the price of real estate doubles.
Yep.
And we're seeing that. And you know the neighborhoods I'm talking about. If you go
yep.
west of Richmond, which was, for example, in the city, which was for a long time risky, highly
yep.
risky. Now it's unbelievable.
Right.
But these are the things that are hard to measure. But once they start happening, and then you look at the basic infrastructure in a city like Buffalo,
yep.
the quality of our arts infrastructure, our cultural infrastructure, the things you've worked on, like the Darwin Martin House, for example. I mean,
yep.
these are things that are incredibly powerful.
Yeah, no, it's true. The neighborhoods, you know, the other thing that makes it makes some of these neighborhoods cool is they're multicultural. They're very interesting and they're diverse. And I think that has been an important driver for Buffalo's West Side, for example. the microbreweries that are all around Buffalo, the micro distilleries, the explosion of restaurants. I mean, we have such a talented culinary community, and they're all starting, you know, new bars and restaurants. And, you know, I don't think there's another city in upstate New York that can rival Buffalo in terms of that scene. But it's all the many things you can do, the waterfront, the communities, the diversity, the multiculturalism, the historic buildings, the art scene. They're all part of the coolness factor. And, you know, it's starting to spread out, you know, parts of the east side, of course, South Buffalo, the old First Ward, you know, there you've got history and you've got growth. Even in Larkin Villa House recently sold for over $100,000. When we started developing that, they were $25,000.
Or less.
I told people, I said, you cannot believe what you can still buy a house for in Buffalo. It's amazing.
It is shocking. And we'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours after these very important message. We have some callers. Stay on the line. We'll get to you right after this break.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. Go there today. We've done something very, very interesting with this, with our website, which doesn't exist anywhere else in the marketplace or anywhere else that we know of in the country even. Go there, and there's a button that says, what's my house worth? Press that button. You're not going to get to one valuation system. You're going to get to three, and that will give you three distinct systems, algorithms that will arrive at a value. But it's the most interesting cross-section that you'll find anywhere in one place to evaluate your own home or any house. It doesn't have to be your own. You could see something for sale, for example. Go to our website, and you can put that address in, and sure enough, there will be three valuations for you to take a look at, all with backup. It's not just a number. There's backup behind the whole thing. It's very, very interesting. I encourage you to go there today. Any house, anywhere, you can, and I'll tell you more later, but the fact of the matter is it's an astounding opportunity to learn about your own home or your community, another house in your community, and only available at huntrealestate.com. And that is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA all across upstate and out to Phoenix, Arizona. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to explore our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, effectively allowing you to buy the before but live the after. That's 633-3700, and ask for details and also ask about our pre-purchase commitment. And for those of you who just want to ask a question about anything relative to real estate, call the only customer service center for real estate in North America. That's the Hunt Customer Service Center at 633-9400. One of our customer service reps is waiting for your call now and will instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need. Whether considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have, and remember, our guarantee stands. No stronger guarantee in the real estate world. We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's a seller security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is Howard Zemsky. Mr. Zemsky is the leader of the Empire State Development Corporation. We've been talking about a wide range of topics relative to the strength of our community, which is really underpins all values in our community when it comes to real estate. But before we get back to that topic, Howard, we have a caller online. This is Gustav from Williamsville. Gustav, how can we help you?
Well, thank you. I kind of garbled cell phone here, but I'm just wondering if Mr. Zemsky feels that whatever economic development strategy can counteract the disaster in the families, the disillusion of the whole family structure, and also you mentioned the lack of skills in some of the young people, and whether whatever job training can counteract the mess in the families? That's my question.
Very interesting topic, and we've talked about that too, Howard. And I know that that probably is not within the mission of ESDC, but you obviously, I know you feel strongly about that.
I mean, listen, we try to work with, you know, a lot of initiatives around, you know, poverty reduction, and there's no single strategy. So you need, you know, it's about housing, and it's about support services, and it's about child care, and it's about public transportation, and it's about access to jobs. And, you know, there's a multi-prong approach where we can, you know, bring as many resources collectively across the state to bear on trying to provide opportunity for people. But, you know, if you think about what provides people with the most opportunity in their lifetime, it's going to be education. If you look at the recent, you know, Excelsior scholarship program as an example, you know, the governor's trying to bring college education to the widest group of people possible. So you can go to college, graduate, stay here in the state of New York, not have to, you know, wrestle college debt for, you know, the first 10 or 20 or 30 years of your, you know, career. At the end of the day, opportunity for people is going to be provided by education. And of course, there are a lot of social services agencies in the county and the state. That's, you know, not, in fairness, it's not my expertise, but, you know, we do work to make investments. We make very purposeful investments in workforce training centers. The reason we do that in the city is so it's accessible to people who need the skills and who could really, you know, benefit from upgraded skills and upgraded jobs, income, and opportunity for them and their families. So where you put things matters, what you put there matters, whether you're working collaboratively with other social service agencies matters. And we're trying to do all those things and, of course, you know, help drive an economy that has job opportunities and a wide array of job opportunities, not just high-skilled jobs, but also on-ramps to the workforce. The tourism industry provides a lot of on-ramps to people to enter the workforce without – you don't need a, you know, graduate degree. You know, so we need a lot of different types of jobs. We have now a diverse economy. That's one of the things I think that's changed a lot. There's a lot of diversity in the economy. So all of those things, there is no one single strategy that can, you know, turn around poverty. But all of those things together, I think, have an impact.
The poverty, I guess, one of the great destroyers and exacerbators of, there is such a word, of the cycle of poverty is a weak family structure. And I think this is what Gustav was referring to, among other things. But a lot of it does lead back to education. I know you're familiar with, for example, Say Yes,
yep,
which pre-existed Excelsior. But if you take those programs together, now you're giving a family, no matter how it's structured, at least some real hope that there's going to be that educational opportunity that you're referring to, and it's accessible. But that has to work its way down through the family, or whatever structure happens to be there. And that's Say Yes's mission, for example, has been expanded greatly beyond the high school years, which is where we started.
Yep, and we supported Say Yes. The state even has supported Say Yes, again, through some of the Buffalo Billion Dollars. But yeah, I mean, you're trying to provide as much opportunity as you can. And, you know, government can't do it all, but obviously has an important role in trying to provide opportunities for people to better themselves and their families, whether it's, you know, housing, education, workforce development skills, and other social services, that sort of intervention from, you know, what's sometimes described as cradle to career is, you know, maybe the most sort of comprehensive approach that I think we've been following.
We have another caller on the line, Howard. This is Sergio from Williamsville. Sergio, how can we help you?
Yes, thank you very much for the opportunity. We've been talking about Buffalo, which I love and grew up in, but I'm also involved possibly in downtown Niagara Falls, which the governor has been focusing on also. And because we're talking about a major $50, $60 million project called the World Weather Center. There's nothing like it in North America. You know, they're a very educational, hopefully job-creating tourism attraction, destination. And I was just wondering what the status of the governor, I guess, and economic development priorities going into downtown Niagara Falls to assist. There's a lot of properties there that just sit there for decades, haven't been moving by the owners, and just wondering what the governor and you guys look at that.
Yeah, I mean, Niagara Falls, as you say, Sergio, has been a huge focus area, and so, you know, there's been a number of strategies we've been using simultaneously. One is to connect Niagara Falls, of course, back to the waterfront. And you see the redo, so to speak, the downgrading, but the greatly enhanced experience of the Robert Moses Parkway, both north and south. You know, connecting the city back to the waterfront, reclaiming a lot of green space, removing a lot of blight. Downtown, investing in the tourism industry there, almost $100 million now invested in the Niagara Falls State Park, upgrading the hotel experience, the whole concept around, there's been like six new hotel projects opened in the last few years, and we were just in Niagara Falls recently announcing the developer for Hotel Niagara, which is a fabulous historic hotel that's, you know, has sat empty and in need of considerable repair for some decades now. So, you know, all of those strategies, more attractions, connection to the waterfront, upgrades to the state park, Cave of the Winds, the Maid of the Mist, a better hotel experience. What we know is if we can extend the stays in Niagara Falls and just close the gap between how long people typically stay in Ontario versus how long they typically stay in New York. If we could close that gap by 50%, we could literally create over 5,000 jobs in Niagara Falls. That's how significant it is. So, looking at additional attractions, we're looking to acquire some underutilized, you talk about underutilized sites. We're actively, in fact, in discussions with several potential buyers to acquire some of these underutilized sites. Again, the governor put money in the Buffalo Billion 2 for that purpose. You see the work going on to connect the city back to the waterfront. You see the upgrades to the park. You see this tremendous growth in hotels and upgraded hotels. And, you know, we're happy to talk about the weather station project. I'm not as familiar with the details of that. But maybe that's something we can take a closer look at. I just, I'm not familiar enough with it to be able to comment on it right now.
In our last minute before the break, Howard, I'm going to ask you to think about your role that extends beyond Western New York, because this is your adopted home. This is not your original home. And we've talked about that before on the show, too.
Yep.
But the fact of life is, and as I travel up and down the thruway, as you do, to our offices, we've got 30 offices outside of Buffalo, and more than that, actually. And I talk to those people, and they look at me, well, what's going on in Buffalo? Why can't we get some of that here?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're starting to sense it, but I want you to think about that, because we got about a minute. Just tell me how you deal with that, because I know you deal with it all the time.
Well, I'll be honest with you. It's so that one of the greatest things is to be out and about in the state of New York and having people say, we want to be the next Buffalo. Because if you had asked yourself, would people from other parts of the state say they want to be like Buffalo?
Never.
10 and 15 years ago, you would have looked at me like I was crazy. So it's great to be the envy of parts of the state. And we are turning the corner in so many parts of upstate now, and we are following a lot of these approaches. The governor has empowered these regions to develop their own strategic plans. They're all focused on downtown revitalization. They're focused on workforce. They're focused on the sectors of their economy. And every region has their unique sectors, might be transportation, manufacturing, or others, and it's turning the corner. So I think that mojo is spreading across upstate.
Well, that's great news. I want to have you expand on that a little bit after the break, and we'll be right back with more with Howard Zemsky after these important messages.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com. Go there today. There's a bunch of cool stuff there that will really interest you in terms of understanding the values in our community. Everywhere I go, people say, oh, prices are going up. Well, find out. Find out exactly what's going on with detail only at HuntRealEstate.com. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today, 633-3700, and ask about our many exclusive programs that really make it easier for you to get into that house and or refinance the one you have and improve it. That's what we're all about here, is improving the quality of our real estate here in Western New York and making it more accessible to everyone. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is Howard Zemsky, the head of the Empire State Development Corporation. I'm not sure what your title is. Is it president?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. The head. You're right, it.
Whatever.
You're the guy. Before the break, Howard, I was just asking you about the rest of the state. We've got a caller on from Rochester now.
Sure.
Why don't we take his call? This is John. Great. From Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hi, Peter. Hey, Howard.
Hey, John.
Howard, I question for you.
Sure.
We've got a resurgence going on in Rochester.
Yep.
Also.
Absolutely.
Town. The thing I've noticed, though, is that when you're in a metropolitan area, and I think Buffalo is probably similar, when you don't have overall population growth, what happens is you're shifting people around. And I've noticed the inner suburbs of Rochester and the outer parts of the city, real estate is relatively stagnant as far as appreciation goes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing a lot of rental properties of formerly owner-occupied single-family homes. And I attribute part of that to a lot of the younger people especially, and some older people are moving downtown.
Yep.
And it deletes demand for the inner suburbs. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, look, I'm, you know, we have to revitalize the downtowns as an important, you know, component. We're not going to have attract young people. We're not going to have new startup businesses. We're not going to realize our potential in these regions if we don't create a vibrant downtown. So in order to have job growth, in order to have companies be able to successfully recruit people and retain people, and to grow the population and the economy, we have to have certain strategies. I cannot say with specificity whether those strategies have any impact on other parts of the community in the short term, but in the long term, if you can grow the economy, if you can keep young people, if you can attract people back, and Rochester lost people just the way Buffalo did, that's your only hope, really, to then get on the right trajectory and grow population, which will be to the benefit of every, you know, inner ring suburb, outer ring suburb. It doesn't matter. So, but you have to have a purposeful strategy, and you have to prioritize things. We prioritize getting the downtown areas back and vibrant and vital again. You'd be amazed at how many companies I speak to around the state, and I'll just say, what's on your mind? Tell me what we can do to help. Like, you know, I want to leave here and I want to learn something. They will say, the more you can do to help our downtowns, the better it is for us, because we are, you know, all trying to attract. Every industry today has a tech component, right? It's not just the tech industry and the non-tech industry. If I ask you, Peter, how much technology investments have you made in this your real estate business, you would say, my gosh, we put a ton of money into the consumer interface and our website and the services. And you talked about valuation services and all these things that are on your website. That's technology. Every business is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all trying to attract next generation talent, and they want to show them, when you come to town, I want to show you, here's what's happening in our city. Here's where you can live. Here's, you know, our vision for the future. And so, yeah, I'm sure that, you know, until we can really grow the populations again, but I'll tell you something, in Rochester, we are again growing the population of young people, just like we are in Buffalo. And it's noticeable and it's statistical. It's, we're talking like 9-10% growth in people like 20 to 35 again. We shrunk that population every year forever, it feels like. And now we are growing that population again. If you have that, then you have population growth baked in your demographic cake. For too long, when we lost people of childbearing ages, then you necessarily have population loss baked in your demographic cake. When you can attract those people back, they start having kids. You just talked to me before the show about how many grandchildren are crawling around your house. I mean, that's, you know, that is how you grow a region. That's how you grow an economy. The consumer is 70% of the economy. If you keep losing young people, people who are having kids, you spent a lot of money, Peter, when you had your kids. You got a new house. You bought all kinds of stuff. You helped drive the economy. You grew your business. You got kids in your business. I mean, that is really, there's no quick fix and there's no silver bullet. But getting those downtowns are really important to, you know, the whole strategy.
No question about it. You know, and you, I know one of the things we've talked about many times in the past, not just you and I, but a bunch of us in the community, is the importance, and going way back, the importance of the link between the educational institutions and business. And for a long time, the ivory tower was truly an ivory tower. And you've worked closely with Satish and others in the education community. So have I.
Yep.
And to me, this is one of the greatest breakthroughs that all these upstate cities really have in the palm of their hand.
Yep.
SU, Syracuse University, Absolutely. University of Rochester, University of Albany, all the private schools surrounding yep. all these the state institutions. It's positively amazing the power in upstate. And then you go to Ithaca and look at what Cornell and the Ithaca College have done to that community.
Amazing. Absolutely.
Union College. St. Lawrence, Colgate, all these schools.
It goes on and on. It's maybe the greatest asset of the state of New York. We have this remarkable system of higher education, public and private institutions. And you're so right. We have these strategies to bring together business and the universities. We try to create, you know, every possible economic incentive to attach business to universities. And you see it here at UB. You've got more startup businesses, more of these startup New York businesses in Buffalo than any part of the state.
Just moving the medical campus or the medical school into the medical campus, what a change that is.
Yeah, that is huge. And you look at all the employment on the Buffalo Niagara Medical Center and the literally growing by thousands. You know, every 5 years you look back and you're like, okay, there's several thousand more jobs here than there were before. So, you know, I agree. And that's one of the reasons that New York State has such a bright future. And when you think about the 21st century, you think about the role of life sciences, you think about the role of technology, you think about how quickly things are changing and these research centers that we have. Doesn't matter if you're talking about, you know, material science, bioinformatics, photonics, nanotechnology. New York State leads in so many of these areas, and for the 21st century, having that type of research in those institutions are going to be so important, and so, you know, we all benefit greatly from that.
One question that may be in the minds of some of our listeners, and we'll have one more question from those listeners, but the Solar City plant.
Yep.
Big investment on the part of the state of New York. Solar City gets sold to Tesla.
Yes.
Tesla now, I guess, I don't know exactly how this happened, but outsourced the production of the solar panels to Panasonic.
Some of them, yeah.
Explain what happened there.
Yeah, so, you know, originally, actually, that company was Solevo, which was an early right. stage business. Now, this is one of the, you might recall, one of the deals that SUNY Poly, ESD, has gotten involved with SUNY Poly in the last year at the governor's invitation. Mm-hmm. So we've, you know, really, I think, gotten our heads and arms around these different projects, but that was originally a kind of emerging solar technology company that had no experience with manufacturing. It was acquired by Solar City, which was the largest mm-hmm. installer of solar panels in the country, but again, had no experience with manufacturing. Tesla acquires Solar City, has tremendous experience with manufacturing. They're manufacturing one of the most technologically sophisticated products in the world, which is an automobile, mm-hmm. right, with all the sensor technologies
Amazing.
And you know, and they're leading in all these areas. So, and they have a partnership with Panasonic in the auto industry. Panasonic makes all of the batteries, right? So they have a good working relationship with Panasonic. Panasonic happens to be one of the world leaders in production of photovoltaic cells. So now we have at the table as our partner a company with over $60 billion market capitalization, plus Panasonic, which has a, you know, many tens of billions of dollars of market capitalization, with a deep bench and experience in manufacturing. So while these ownership changes all take some time as people sort of assess the people and assess the strategy and they bring their own experts to the table, we have continually moved up the food chain, so to speak, in terms of the prospects and stability and manufacturing expertise that those companies have. So you're starting to ramp up. Panasonic is producing in the plant, will be producing some photovoltaic cells. Tesla will be taking those cells and putting them into things like solar roof tiles and things like that. So that is starting to ramp up. Panasonic had a job fair for some hundreds of people recently where they're starting to hire and ramp up. If you drive by that facility, as I do, you see more and more cars in the parking lot. And so I think it has a, you know, it has a bright future, but it has been, you know, three owners in 3 years. But it's right now, if you said, what's the difference between being owned by Tesla / Panasonic and being owned by Solevo? Solevo was a promising technology company that hadn't gone from the lab to the fab. Tesla is one of the world's leading clean energy companies with, you know, incredible resources. We're in a much better place today than we were years ago.
Thankfully, I remember that Solevo thing. It wasn't supposed to be originally about a third the size of it is
now? Yes, it was originally 250,000 square feet. It's now 1.2 million square feet. So, you know, it's an amazingly large facility. I think we'll look back on it, you know, 10 years from now and say, well, that's, you know, been fabulous for Western New York. But, of course, going through three owners in 3 years causes people anxiety. But I think the takeaway should be this plant is in the right hands with the right skills and the right resources.
I think that has to be the takeaway because I took a tour of the plant a year ago, May, with Frank Simonelli and a group of business people. And it was an amazing, amazing sight. But they were ready to deliver it within probably 30 days of, of our visit. And since then, of course, so much has happened.
Yep.
Our listeners probably have seen varying numbers on what the employment situation is going to be there. What will it ultimately be, do you think?
I mean, I think in that facility itself, there'll be at least 500 people, and then there'll be another over 500 people either in the facility or in other providing other services for Tesla in the community. So it'll be over 1,000 people, which is, you know, we don't have that many 1,000-plus person employers.
No,
it'll be in the manufacturing. It'll be in clean energy. It'll give us opportunities with the supply chain. It'll be with an international company. I think it will prove, and if we do our job properly, we will mine the opportunity with their suppliers and others. And you know, it'll cement Buffalo, I think, as one of the leaders in clean energy, which we obviously are. We've got amazing hydropower assets. We've got wind, you know, right off of Bethlehem Steel. We're generating a lot of energy from wind. We'll have solar panels. And I think it'll be a great Buffalo story at the end of the day.
We always like to end on a high note. I think that's a pretty high note. Will we make batteries there or just solar panels?
It's the intention is to make solar panels. I don't believe they're discussing making batteries there. They make the batteries in Nevada, and they've got literally like
that's
over
in Reno, that huge plant they have there. Is that
over
right?
5 million square feet, over 5 million Shocking. Square feet of battery production in Nevada. So they have plenty of space to make batteries, but we got plenty of space to do everything solar. And I think we'll both be happy with it at the end of the day.
And it's a very optimistic message to end on. Howard Zemsky, head of the Empire State Development Corporation, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Peter.
It's been a great show and great thank you all for joining us here, the public, and we'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, Western New York is hunt country.